Good morning. I happen to be learning a bunch of Isavetar and about food and kashrut, so that's kind of the theme that I'll be going on, I guess, the next number of classes, unless someone has a specific request. But this week, it's a new topic. If you haven't weren't here last week, it's not related to what we've done in the past. I want to talk about pot akum. And it's something that, other than maybe you might have heard around Saritami Tshuva, it's not something that we really hear about or think about so often. You may have heard, take a look, for instance, at source number 2. Shulchan Aruch quotes, before I get to the Shulchan Aruch, when it comes...
Before you start, yeah. What is pot akum?
Yeah, I'm about to translate. I'm about to...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm about to explain. But, yes. When it comes to the Shulchan Aruch and Kuf, in the previous Siman, Kuf Yud Aleph, lists that the rabbis at some point in history, and there's some debate about exactly how it happened and when it happened, but at some point there were a number of gzeirot against different types of decrees, against different types of food items, because we were worried that if we allowed them, we'd be too close to non-Jews. So some of it has to do with wine.
Which would lead to intermarriage.
Which would lead to intermarriage, yes. It would lead to intermarriage. Nothing inherently wrong. It's more about problem of intermarriage, yes. So there's a problem of wine. You may have heard of Chalav Yisrael when it comes to different milk and cheeses. And at some point, the Gemara, and food, Bishul Akum, which is, you know, cooking food, as well as the Gemara mentions Pat Akum, which is bread. So, let's take a look at source number 2. Pat Akum, bread, which is made by a non-Jew. Asr Chachamim, at the beginning of Shulchan Aruch and the beginning of Kufi Bet. Asr Chachamim le'echol pat shel amim ovdei kochavi mishum chatnut. The sages prohibited a person to eat bread which is made by a non-Jew because of a concern that if you eat bread made by a non-Jew, it will lead to intermarriage, or lead to close ties, which will lead to intermarriage. Yeah. V'afilu b'makom d'leka mishum chatnut asur. Even if there's no concern for marriage, because they hate you, because you're buying bread which is, you know, like from a store, and there's, you know, you don't even know who's responsible for making the bread. Nonetheless, it's still gonna be prohibited. That's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskens. So you may stop right here and say, wait, what would we do? Because if you've ever bought, if you buy Bagels & Co., that's made by, well, Bagels & Co. part of it's made by Jews.
It's Pasuk Yisrael, they told me when I called them up.
Yeah, but when it comes to, I don't know if you've ever bought bread at like a supermarket, you buy Fairway, you buy at Trader Joe's, wherever you buy bread, so those breads are almost definitely not Pasuk Yisrael. They're almost definitely, they're called palter. They're made by companies, right? They're made by bakeries.
Being made by a non-Jew, the company could be Jewish, but it'd be non-Jews making it.
Yeah, it has to be the specific employee, a specific person who puts it into the oven.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't make a difference whether they're employed by Jews or not.
I assume we're going to get this. There's an exception for paspal there.
We're going to get there right now. So this is actually a debate. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes as follows. This is one of the many places where, famously, Sfardim have a lot of kulas, but these are one of the places where Sfardim have more of a chumrah, in theory. Which is why it's better to be Ashkenazi in some ways if you're looking for kulas. Shulchan Aruch and Source Tziv Bet as follows: V'yesh makomot shemekilin medavar v'lokhim minachzol ma'ovi kochavim b'makom she'ein sham nachzol Yisrael m'sein shishas tzchak. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes that there are some people who are mekel. It doesn't actually sound like he paskins this way, but there are some people who are paskin that if you live in a town where there is no Jewish bakery, then in that case you're allowed to buy from the non-Jewish bakery. So that would mean if I, you know, live in, I don't know, Saskatchewan, and there are no Jews there, then there's no Jewish bakery, then I can buy from the non-kosher bakery. But implication being, if there is a kosher bakery,
now,
right?
So it's got to be Jewish. It's still got to be kosher.
Yeah, well, it's got to be kosher either way. But yes. Yeah. If there's a thank you for the emendation. If there's a Jewish bakery, a Jewish-owned bakery, Jewish-operated bakery, then it has to be, then you wouldn't be allowed to go to the non-Jewish bakery. So non-Jewish bakery. So in other words, you wouldn't be allowed to go in, you know, all of New York because of the existence of Bagel & Co., so you wouldn't be allowed to buy bread anywhere else. You'd have to only buy bread at Bagels & Co. And that really is the way the Shulchan Aruch paskens. That's the more makel position of the Shulchan Aruch. However, here comes the Ramah, and this is what we tend to rely on. V'yesh omrim da'afilu makum shepat Yisrael matzoi. So some people say, and this is the way that we pass down as Ashkenazim, even where there is Jewish bread, nonetheless, it's still permitted to buy pot akum. It's still allowed to buy non-Jewish bread, which is made in a bakery, made in a commercial setting. If it was made, in someone's private home, that'd be a different story. But to be, to buy bread in a commercial setting, that's where you typically pass in, which is why you can buy from the OU and the Chafke and all these, very reliable hefsherim, bread from Fairway and bread from Trader Joe's or all sorts of supermarkets. Take a look at that's the Shulchan Aruch. The Shach, who's one of the main commentaries on the, and one of the main Ashkenazi poskim on the Shulchan Aruch, quotes as follows. Source number 3. V'katvu Achronim is commenting on the Ramaz statement there that there are some people who are even matir any pot akum. V'afilu katvu Achronim v'harav v'toraz chazat v'abach shekenit pashet haminhagt. So the Achronim write that indeed not only the Ramaz had written this as v'yesh omrim, this is an opinion, which it believes that it is permitted to have pot akum. So the Shach said pot nachdom. So the Shach says not only is this an opinion, but this is actually the minhag in Ashkenaz. In, Ashkenazi communities, this is the minhag has spread that indeed we are not machmir when it comes to pot akum, that you're allowed to go buy bread from a non-Jewish bakery, even if there are Jewish bakeries available. Miu, nonetheless, katav v'torat chatat, b'shem ha'poskim, nonetheless, there are the Torah Chata, which is the Ramaz other sefer, writes that b'yemei yud yemei tshuva yesh lizar b'pachel ovdei kochavim. Nonetheless, there is a practice, a very strong minhag, that during the Aseret Yemei Tshuva, you should dafka only eat pat Yisrael, which is I think people have probably heard of that minhag. It's part to do with part of like the holiness that we're trying to do during those 10 days. It's really the 7 days. To get pot Yisrael, Yesh Lizar Af Koli Tazah Mihu Nira Yesh Lizar Af Koli Mosa Shana Shelo Likach Pasha Ozik Chavim Mina Palter Hecher Yesh Palter Yisrael Im Lo Shepat Ovek Chavim Yafe Yoter De Az Shari Kliyamad Sifei. So the Shach now adds another emendation. He says even though it's true that in theory I'd be allowed to go to a non-Jewish but kosher bakery, even in a place where there is a kosher bakery available, the Jewish bakery. Nonetheless, he thinks that even when it comes to year-round purchases, if the Jewish bakery is equal in quality to the non-Jewish bakery, then you should go to the Jewish bakery.
How about price?
Price is not mentioned here.
Just take it for granted.
Yeah, it says quality of the bread. I would say in terms of like Jewish value, it's probably nice to support the Jewish bakeries. Right. On the other hand, though, as you mentioned, price can be a significant factor. And then, the prepackaged bagels you can buy in like supermarket, you can buy 12 of them for, $2. That's a lot cheaper than the bagels you buy at Bagels & Co. They might not be as good, but they are a lot cheaper. And second thing is that this suggests maybe that this has to do with the same type of bread. What if there's, different types of bread? So what if the bakery only sells challah? But I don't want challah. I want a baguette. I want bagels, right? And they don't sell bagels at the bakery, at the Jewish bakery. So what is that permitted? So it sounds like from the Shach that would be also fine. It sounds that way. But this is certainly like a slightly more machmir position, and I think this is actually typically the way we do Paskin. But take a look at Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe deals with this question kind of from a side perspective. He doesn't deal with it frontally because it's not the question that he was posed. So Rav Moshe does deal with the question of pot akum, and it's pretty clear in terms of his psak, what emerges is his psak generally, not just for the topic at hand, but really psak in general for pot akum. So Rav Moshe writes in the tshuva, this is written in 1962, it's a tshuva that has chelek bet miyordea simon lamed gimel, and Rav Moshe is, there's several different topics actually in this tshuva, and I think we've actually learned at different points in time most of this tshuva. Because if you remember from last year, I think we talked about, he has one last comment here is about whether you should wear a kippah if you're going to be doing something that is forbidden of some sort. So we looked at some of these as tshuvas before. So in part of this list of tshuvas he sends, the first tshuva is about the following topic. Hinei v'davar, this is source number one. Hineve davar habegel asher beoda isa notni mota b'mayin rosin. So the question is the following: can you buy bagels which are made by non-Jews? They have to be kosher, but assuming they are kosher, can I buy bagels which are produced entirely by non-Jewish employees, by non-Jewish, you know, bakers? So there are two potential problems. The first problem that Moshe deal with, and we'll come back to a little bit later, come back on the second half of the sheet. But the first potential issue you might deal with is the issue of what's called bishalakum. Right, so we've been talking about the problem of pot akum, which is bread specifically, but there's a separate prohibition of what's called bishul akum, which is a prohibition to eat any cooked foods. And this is actually a prohibition which we do paskin. This is the way the minhag is bread. We do indeed have this minhag not to eat, or halacha, not to eat bishul akum. And so the concern is that when it comes to most breads are not cooked. Right, if you've ever made challah, so I don't think I've ever seen challah cooked. I mean, maybe some type of water challah occasionally, but very rarely. Typically, the way the challah or most breads are made is you knead the flour into dough, and you put it in the oven or something, or some type of heat source. It rises, and that's how you make bread. There's no liquid. There's no cooking. However, a bagel, bagels are boiled before they are baked. Indeed, most bagel stores, you can actually probably see the big, huge pot they have they're dunking kind of the bagel, the water, and that's how they kind of get the shape and the texture of a bagel. So is that considered cooking? Because it is boiling hot water. You know, it's kind of the definition of cooking is, you know, putting something in boiling hot water that would be cooking. So is that considered cooking in this problem, in this case? So Rav Moshe says, Pashut la'niu dati, mikeban she'abishol ksat aydei mayim roski ma'itayista ru'i la'chila, lo nesna mitad bishol akum. So it seems to me, he's going to, in a later tshuva, amend that there's a typo here, but it seems to me that since the cooking here, the isa, the dough, is still not really edible, right? You really can't eat the dough of a bagel which has only been dunked in hot water. It's still just dough. So because it's not edible, there's no prohibition of bishul akum. So that's the motion. First thing, when it comes to bishul akum, no prohibition of bagels. You don't have to be concerned about it because it's not edible at the stage where it's being cooked. Later on, when it comes to the baking, then it is obviously edible. That's, you know, yummy bagels. They can be great. But at that point, you're not cooking it. You're baking it, in which case you don't have to deal with bishul akum. You deal with pot akum. What about the other side? Mitad afia. So here, Moshe kind of actually discusses his general psak when it comes to pot akum. And he says as follows. Mitad afia, since when it comes to baking, himrak within pot akum shepaltar. This is what's called pot palter. This is called commercial or bakery bread which is made by, you know, in a commercial setting. So the minhag, this is the minhag where Moshe is stating, not just, you know, this is the way that Americans paskin. The minhag is that we are mako to allow pot palter even in places where pot mitzrayim is available. So if I want to go and buy a bagel from Trader Joe's, from Fairway, I would be allowed to buy such a bagel, despite the fact I could buy a bagel from Bagels & Co. This is the way of Moshe Pasuk. We do indeed follow this kula of the Ramah. And just and similarly, the Shach, as we saw at the bottom of the page, also comments that that's also the minhag, and that's indeed the way we paskin. So Rav Moshe is, in effect, in this tshuva, certifying or ascertaining that really, indeed, this is our minhag. We are mako for pot akum. Just as a statement, not everyone is mako for pot akum. I think but there are a number of, let's say, charedim, especially from Israel, who are much more machmer for pot akum. Especially in Israel, it's much more debatable because there's such a proliferation of, you know, Jewish-owned bakeries that to rely on the kula to use non-Jewish bakeries, it's like the minhag almost has become, not even for Ashkenazim, not to use non-Jewish bakeries. In America, though, that, you know, there aren't that many Jewish bakeries, and even in New York, you know, even in Manhattan, there aren't that many Jewish bakeries. So it's certainly less common, it's certainly more common to rely on the kula, you know, in America, in a way that...
Also, if you're talking about quality of bread in America, there's certain kinds of bread you only get, like...
Yeah. So this is so far assuming it...
Yeah. Buy, like, Arnold's or...
Yeah, yeah. So far we're assuming this is the same quality bread.
Yeah.
We're talking about, let's say the, you know, you can buy challah that's made by, you know, a non-Jewish baker. So that would be, in effect, equivalent to, you know, Jewish challah. And at least in our minhag, the way that Ashkenazim possibly, you could buy the non-Jewish challah as long as, you know, it's kosher, but as long as the ingredients are kosher. But in terms of the fact that it was made by non-Jews, that wouldn't be a problem. But I'll just tell you, in Israel, we typically do, they do probably do paskin the chumrah here, because there really are so many Jewish bakeries. You know, most of the bakeries are Jewish, that it's almost impressive to find a non-Jewish bakery. And it reminds me, this isn't exactly the same topic, it's slightly different, but it reminds me that my brother once, he was an accident, once was going to my uncle in Israel. He was in yeshiva for the year, and he brought him wine, like as a nice gift, like for wine for Shabbos or come for Shabbos, and the wine was not kosher wine. And my brother didn't realize, like, he just bought wine at a supermarket. And, so my uncle said, like, not only is it like you bring non kosher wine, but like you, it's like impressive that you found me non kosher wine. so few non kosher wines in Israel, like, you have to really look for it. So the same is kind of true about pot, not same extent, but it is true that in Israel it's much harder to find the bread which is made by non-Jews. I mean, it's really not that common in Israel. In obviously in America and in Chutzar, it's just much more common, and the question certainly would be much more applicable. But Rav Moshe certainly paskins for the American community that the minhag indeed is that you are allowed to eat pot palter. Not only that, but Rav Moshe adds there's also a second reason to permit it. Not only because the Ramah permits it, but also because the gam, kevan shebagel, kotev kotrato, shelo matsui shel yisrael af shepat acher matsui, nechshav lo matsui. The individual who's asking this question, I don't remember exactly what town he's living in, but the person who's writing this question tells Rav Moshe that the bagels, even though there are Jewish bakeries, there's a Jewish bakery, and the Jewish bakery probably makes challah and other such foods, it does not make bagels. So, and this would be equally applicable to the question of what about if I want to have baguettes, I want to have, you know, specific breads that aren't made, you know, by Jewish bakeries. So the Shulchan Aruch himself seems to paskin, even though he was more machmir, seems to say that in that case, umutar afle mechaber kisa b'sif dalet. And I quoted the wrong thing at the end on this verse too, so I can't read it inside. But the Shulchan Aruch himself says that if indeed you live in a town where there is a Jewish bakery, but the type of bread that you want isn't found in the Jewish bakery, so then even in that case, you'd still be allowed to buy the bread in the non-Jewish bakery. Now, does the type of bread apply also to things like preservatives or things like the cost of bread? It's not so simple. I think the cost is the hardest to justify. I think you'd have to go to the Jewish bakery for terms of cost. That was the only difference. Preservatives, that might honestly be a different type of bread at that point. You know, bagels bought at a supermarket are very different than bagels bought at a bakery, just in terms of quality. Like, I would be much more reticent to buy a bagel at a supermarket because they're just not nearly as good.
But just to be clear, they are not in any fashion allowing you to buy bread made by a non-Jew at home. Let's say you had a friend who was a vegan, so there's nothing not kosher in his house because he's strictly vegan. There's nothing that wouldn't be kosher. But
the vinegar might not be. But
he makes a bread. It's obviously kosher, but he made it in his house. You can't buy it.
Yeah. Unless he's selling it. Yes. When it comes to pot palter, actually, the definition is not about whether or not it's like where it was made. Like, it doesn't matter whose oven it is. What matters is what was the purpose of this bread. Was it intended to be eaten in your house or intended to be eaten to be sold publicly?
Oh, so if you had a vegan friend who was selling bread out of the house, you could buy it.
Yeah, if he's doing like a bake sale.
Okay.
Yeah, that actually would be fine. Although, just to be clear,
you have to know, it's really kosher.
Yeah, but also to be clear, vegans, like, there are potential other issues with vinegar, and only true. But it would be, in theory, there would not be an issue of buying vegan bread, you know, from someone's home if you knew that they were intentionally selling it. And it wasn't just like leftovers, you know.
Right.
That they happen to be selling.
I'm sorry if I missed something in the beginning, but this means, like, if I know the ingredients of something in, like, Bread's Bakery.
Yeah, we have to assume it's kosher. Yeah.
Okay.
So this is why.
But I could go and buy it.
Yeah, so this is why in America, well, you can go and buy, you know, Hafke, I think, more than OU, but Hafke, like, has a bunch of hechshers for bread in Fairway or in Trader Joe's. And those breads almost definitely are not made by Jewish bakers. Like, the actual person who put it in the oven is very unlikely to be Jewish. But it's fine because we rely on this for Moshe. The same thing is true if you go to a foreign country. Let's say you go to France, so the bread there, for instance, is highly regulated. Not only is it highly regulated, but they actually are, it's actually subsidized by the government because it's, you know, the French baguette. It's like the milk is subsidized, the bread is subsidized, so the standard baguette is subsidized and it's regulated. But you cannot add more ingredients. So the typical stock for most people, especially if you're a tourist, is that if you want to buy bread, add a typical baguette, a simple baguette, no like special additives, then you can, because it, you don't even need to know, there's no, you don't have to share them the same way we have in America with the OU, but you go to a random bakery, as long as you buy the simple baguette, it's regulated in France, it's fine. But, on the other hand, if you go to Italy, or to Spain, so then you, it's much more difficult to buy bread, even if you go to the commercial bakeries, because in Italy and in Spain, they use, in many bakeries, they add certain additives. Sometimes they add lard, or they add other animal fats or enzymes as part of the baking process. And that's like in a typical bakery. And so even though, yes, it's true that you're allowed to eat pat akum, the ingredients are not kosher, in which case you're not allowed to just buy it. You have to actually ascertain that the ingredients were kosher and look at the lists and, you know.
Right, and if you ask them and all the ingredients are kosher, can you is that enough to trust, or does it need to be, like, actually monitored?
It's the question of, like, trusting is, like, a very complicated question. If you just went to a bakery and asked them, it's probably not good enough unless, like, you really, unless there's a way that, like, you'd be able to really sue them, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, unless you could really sue them. Like, if you're able to couch in terms of, like, oh, I'm, like, deathly allergic to non-kosher ingredients, you know, then I think maybe you could argue it, but it's a little bit trickier. Because if there's a possibility they would lie to you, then, like, we don't really believe them.
So, generally speaking, then, we can't really go into any non-kosher bakery and just, even if we ask them the ingredients.
Yeah, which is why, like, yeah, people have asked me before, if you go to these foreign countries, I tell you, if you're in France, if you're in Switzerland, because I know actually Switzerland is similar, you got to buy the simple bread, it's fine. You don't need to like make sure it's on the list. You can just buy the very simple regulated bread. But if you go to countries like Spain or Italy, you can't. You have to actually look at the lists that they have, and you know they have different lists of what particular bread they know to be kosher, and that's where you can buy. But you can't just buy bread at some random bakery. Which is sometimes a shame because it does smell very good.
There's nothing like bakery.
Yeah, but it's, at least in France, it is kosher, which has some...
We're all going to France next week as part of our field trip.
Yeah, if anyone would like to bring it, it is worthwhile. But the, okay, so that's in terms to the, so nonetheless, when it comes to the, so Moshe here is saying that not only are we makel in that, I'm just going back to what we said before, not only are we makel that we allow bread in America, which was made in the commercial setting, but even the Shulchan Aruch seems to be makel if there is no similar type of bread available which is made by Jews. So if there's, you know, you live in a town where there is challah, but there is no bagels or there are no baguettes or something, then that would also be a case, which is true in many places, let's say in France. In Paris, you know, I could buy, they also have baguettes too, so not really applicable. In many small towns, you can buy challah. There often is, like, if there's a Jewish community, there almost always is a Jewish bakery of sorts. Someone is selling challah, almost always. But someone might not be selling kosher bagels if it's a small town, or someone might not be selling, you know, more complicated breads than bagels or baguettes or challah. I know how the possible Jews eat other than bagels and challah, but, you know, some Jews do have a little bit a wider experience in their palate. But if it is you, so maybe you want specialized bread. So even the Shulchan Aruch seems to paskin that you'd be mako in that scenario.
But paltry, he's not talking about a private bakery.
No, all these are specifically, all these cases are commercial bakeries, meaning anytime someone is intentionally trying to sell their bread. As I said earlier, it doesn't make a difference whether it's made in someone's private home or not. I can make bread and have a bake sale. Or my non-Jewish friend, Christopher, can make bread and have a bake sale and I'd be fine. As long as the intention of the sale is of the baking was in order to sell it, then that's fine. Because the whole point here is Mishum Chatnut, it's because we're concerned that it might lead to, you know, too close ties and intermarriage. So that's only really going to be a problem if they invite me to their house to, like, share their bread, you know, their private bread that they made, you know, at home. But if they're planning on selling it, so, like, even if it's made in a private home, I'm not going to be best friends, you know, with, like, the baker. It's, you know, like, to be friendly, but you're not going to, you know, end up having these close social ties. So that's where Moshe is Pesach here, and he says, when it comes to the bagel, that's why it's permitted. Even though the Shulchan Aruch says this statement about if there are, if this particular type of bread is not available, the Shulchan Aruch only says that in the Yish Omrim, Mashba Shepostikin, the Halavi Cholikaze, it sounds like the Shulchan Aruch actually passes this way. V'chein Mifurish Peshach, and the Shach also seems to include that way. So this is the way we Paskin. I'm skipping a little bit. V'chein Ein L'Asar HaBegel D'Rov B'nei Adam HaNogim Heter Pashal Akum Paltar. And therefore, for most people who are nohag to be makel when it comes to pot palter, there is no problem to buy bagels, assuming the ingredients are kosher. So Rav Moshe really, you know, certifies kind of this sock that I think most people do hold. Some people are machmir for pot Yisrael, but most people, especially in America, are not. That all with regard to pot akum. Any questions about pot akum? Okay. So we started in the beginning of this topic, as there was a very adjacent topic of what's called bishul akum, which means food which is cooked by a non-Jew. And indeed, we do paskin that there is a problem of bishul akum. There is a heter when it comes to bishul akum. There are several heterim, which doesn't always apply to pot akum, but one such heter is that if the pilot light or the flame is turned on, it's like someone turns on the oven by a Jew, then everything else doesn't matter, which is how most restaurants are operated with non-Jewish workers. There's a mashkiach who's Jewish and checks the food as kosher, but the mashkiach is usually not there all day actually cooking the food. You actually have a non-Jew who's, you know, making a steak or whatever it is. But at the same time, the oven is usually turned on by a Jew, or it has to be turned on by a Jew, otherwise you might have a problem of bishul akum.
Back in the day when we had pizza, what was it called, the one on 72nd Street, the pizza store, I can't even remember the name of it, Yonatan Friedman, who's now a rabbi in Gush, he used to be the guy who turned on the ovens. I mean, he worked there, but he was also the official Jewish oven turner-oner.
Right. Yeah. So that's, there are, I know that, I've been with my family. We've been to, in France, it's right next to Geneva, with my grandfather, and then we go skiing somewhere pretty close by in France. And it's like a small town, or like, it's like a nice ski town, like very classic European. And, there obviously is no Jewish bakery there. But there is the typical French bakery that has a simple baguette, which tastes very good. So I know that I have a cousin who's been to the same place, and he's Haredi, and he, you know, in the old sense of the word Haredi. And so when he goes, he actually every time makes sure to turn on the pilot light. He actually goes to the store and says, like, do you mind if I turn on the light? The pilot light, you know, when, you know, I'm here in town, just, like, it's not a big deal for them. Like, just turn on the light. Yeah, I turn it off and turn it back on, just so that I can eat the bread. But my family, well, we're using that for machmir, because that's not the psak in America. There's no reason they have to schlep out at like 2 in the morning to turn on the light, because that's when they start baking the bread. It's actually very early in the morning. So,
well, where does he get the idea that you even have to do that for bread altogether?
What?
To turn on the flame, if it's only applied to cooking.
Well, that would be the, well, that's because he is machmir to not eat pot palter.
Okay.
Because, I mean,
so
he lives in Israel.
So it's considered
Israel
if you just turn on
the
flame.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, although it's actually some debate. It's not just entirely that's enough, but he's working slightly makel in that sense, too.
Okay.
But, yeah. It is definitely better than
that. Stir the pot once, that's good enough.
Well, we wouldn't be able to stir the pot when it comes to bread, but
No, I'm talking about pot.
Yeah, pot. Yeah.
Pot, excuse me.
Pot, yeah, bishul akum. Yeah, you'd be able to just stir the pot.
Right.
So here's where Moshe has two interesting tshuvas, which is, what's the, you know, interplay between the two of these things, right? There's, on the one hand, there's bishul akum, and there's pot akum. But pot akum, right, bread, not only is it true that some things are actually cooked, like a bagel is put in boiling water, but baking is a type of cooking, right? It's a more specialized type of cooking.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an interesting question to be asked, do the prohibitions of bishul akum apply to bread? Which would be, you know, pretty significant then. So Rav Moshe kind of deals with this in two different tshuvas, this, like, question of the interplay between bishul akum and pot akum. So in the first tshuva, quoted in source number 4, he says as follows, Chelek Dalet of Yoredei HaSiman Dalet, this is written in 1986. So he writes as follows, this is a comment that his grandson, Rabbi Mordechai Tendler, wrote to him based on his first tshuva that we just saw earlier. And his first tshuva wrote as follows, Shita Sham, Hinei b'davar bego asher be'oda isa, notnim ota b'mayim rotchim, v'achar kal chofim ota b'tanur, imish b'ze ister b'shuli akum. So we saw in that tshuva, the question was asked, a bagel, which is first, before it is put in the oven, it is first cooked, you know, briefly, in boiling hot water, is a problem of Bishul Akum. And Rav Moshe, in that tshuva, the text that had been written, the way it's been published, had said, Pashut mikivan shebishul ksat aydei amayim rotchim haita haisa ru'uya lachila lo nesra mitzad bishuli akum. And so according to the version that is printed, it actually says that because the dough, which is boiled, is able to be eaten, there's no problem with Bishul Akum. So his grandson that said, Machuva said, like, wait, like, you know, Zaidi, how can you write that? Like, it's actually Dafka the opposite. So Rav Moshe in this tshuva begins said, you know what, it's a toast defus, it needs to say the opposite, that because the food is unedible at that point, you can't really eat the bread at that point, so it's not going to be a problem of Bishul Akum. So just an interesting side point that, you know, there are typos. What's still interesting about it is that if I look at the printed tshuva of Chila Gimel, you know, that previous tshuva, so my version of Igros Moshe was published, you know, posthumously, many years after this correction, and yet it still has the mistaken version of it.
Wow.
Do they even have a note saying it's a mistake?
I think so. In part, let me see what Bar Ilan had here. Did it fix it here? No, it didn't fix it. So the Bar Ilan version, like we saw, which I copied and pasted, didn't have the fixed version. And if I hadn't looked at that other Moshe, I wouldn't have known that there was a problem. I actually remember reading it the first time I read the tshuva. I was like, I was very confused.
Makes no sense.
Yeah.
I actually spent like 3 times reading it. I was reading it, and whatever. I was like, at some point, I'll have to look it up. I don't fully get it. And I saw this other tshuva. I'm like, oh, now it makes sense. But it is interesting in terms of publishing practices.
So. Right, they're like propagating misinformation.
Yeah. So it's an interesting question just about publishing practices to be, you know, authentic and interesting questions about it. But either way, kind of a side issue. However, there's also two other things that Rav Moshe adds here, which are also relevant when it comes to the interplay between Bishul Akum and Pat Akum. I'm gonna Vegan Medina. Tzedeket tanatcha shefilu mibashel habatzek v'nase ra'ui lachila me'achar shenechshav kepat nichlal beheter pat de'isr bishul akum chal gam advar masluyim beheter pat kishesheyach mo bevegel have gam kishibashel mikodem. So I'm going to skip this and we'll come back to this. I'll translate this and come back to this after the next tshuva. But let's go to the next reason, the third reason that he gives, third thing he gives. V'gam tzedeket tanatcha shefilu im kishnibashel ha'ra'ui lachila מבחינת איסר בישל אקום אין נסר, שהרי אין דרך העולם לכל כך, ובטח אין עולה כך לשולחן מלאכים. So even if, the promotion now adding more kulas when it comes to the problem of bishel akum, at least for bagels. Why is there no problem with bishel akum when it comes to bagels? Because not only is it true that it's not edible, but even were it to be edible, so even when we talk about the fact that it's edible, it has to be something that people still eat. Yes, it's true, like some weirdo, you know, might eat a bagel, like, or, you know, bread that's been boils for like a few minutes, but no one else really eats it like that way. Now everyone has to wait for it to be baked. So it's no problem Bishul Akum for like the weird foods if no one eats it that way. Not only that, but one of the other heterim for Bishul Akum is that Bishul Akum has to be something which is Roi La'ula Shulchan Malachim. It has to be something which can go onto like a king's banquet. Something which is, you know, very, something that's like a nice food. But if it's like a snack, this is where it comes up usually, like potato chips. So potato chips are not something that, you know, typically eaten at, you know, I'm sure at the coronation they're not eating potato chips.
That's the item in Donald Trump's White House.
Yeah, well, I don't know if he's the example of his food choices. I don't know what his food choices are, though.
Reagan had jelly beans.
Yeah. I think so did Obama, apparently. I think he also had like 7 jelly beans every night or something. You can read, there's like all these articles about, yeah, the fascination. But either way, so those types of foods are not, like, candy is not really considered to be Bishul Akum. So he's saying that even when it comes to this type of bread, like the dough which is put in the boiling hot water, even if it was, like, theoretically edible, like, that's certainly not something that, like, you present to, like, you know, a royal banquet would not have that type of food. So no problem with Bishul Akum. So in terms of the interplay, bagels are not going to be a problem no matter what with Bishul Akum. There is potentially a problem with Pat Akum, and that was the previous tshuva, And that's where he said that our minhag is not to be mashmir for it, even if there are Jewish bakeries available. And as I said, in Israel, it's a little bit worse. The minhag tends to be a little more mashmir.
You know, it's interesting to me, though. Why? I mean, I understand the king's table is something that's used a lot in halacha, so I understand that. But when it comes to stuff like cooking, you would think it would be whether it's something a normal person would serve at their table, because that's the whole idea of not having bishulachim, is not eating with your everyday stam goy, because you might have intermarriage. So you would think it wouldn't have to rise to the level of what King Charles is eating, but rather some schlepper Englishman.
Yeah, so king here doesn't mean literally king. I mean, yeah. It's true that probably, you know, some of the food that I eat is probably not served at the, well, she's of the British family. Like, the British don't really, they cook weird food. Yeah. So I don't know if I want to use them as an example anyways. But even most kings, like, or queens, most monarchs, they might have, like, very specialized, fancy food. It's, like, very high quality that, you know, my Shabbos table or everyday table doesn't necessarily have. It's an expression. It doesn't mean literally a king's table. But any food that's really, you know, a set meal, like anything you would have at, like, a formal meal, you invite a guest, this is what you'd serve them, that can be a problem of bishulachim. I mean, they're categories. This is in general. But something like potato chips or snacks or that sort, that's not going to be a problem bishulachim. It's not going to be a problem. On the other hand, like something like a cake, right? So that's like a fancy dessert. You know, people, you serve cake for dessert. That will be a problem of bishulachim, indeed. So that's kind of the line here. So either way, what about, so there's another reason when it comes to the interplay between bishulachim and potachim. And to understand this, it's worth going to source number 6 to the tour. And part of this is I kind of want to take a step back, and I didn't really explain fully why is it the different opinions when it comes to potachim. What are the different opinions? So there's a few different opinions when it comes to what is permitted and not permitted. We already saw a few different versions. So I'm just going to read and I'll explain as I go on. So number 1, the tour says as follows, the source number 6. Pachil ovdei kol gilulim, the bread of non-Jews. Yesh dvarim she'asur chachamim apapi she'in lam ikar min ha-Torah, kmo pachil ovdei gilulim afilu afo Yisrael. So there are some things that the rabbi sages prohibited, even though they're not prohibited by the Torah, such as, for instance, bread which is made by a non-Jew. V'chol elu advarim asur mishum chatnut, and all of these type of things, and he had listed other things and I cut them out, are prohibited because of intermarriage. Perish, what that means, shelo yavo litchatein b'hem, shekol elu moshim lev ha'adam, v'mid kariv aleim be'achad me'elu yavo litchatein b'hem. That all of these things are things which potentially might lead to having very close social ties, and therefore might lead to intermarriage. And indeed, it is true that, you know, bread is classically something which is, you know, it's tied to having close social connections. You know, you break bread with someone, right? It's and actually, in literature, breaking bread is often a symbolism actually for a lot more than just only friendship. That often is a symbolism of some type of sexual relationship also.
How about beer?
So beer would be a problem of potentially of alcoholic drinks, which is a separate problem.
I think that's more of an issue, you know, than bread. Going out to work for, you know, for a beer or something.
Yeah, so actually beer would be an example of, this wouldn't be pot, it would be a problem of, of like yayin, Stam Yenam, yeah, problem with Stam Yenam, of having non-kosher alcoholic drinks, non-Jewish produced alcoholic drinks.
Does beer need hashkafa?
I think in America, typically, no.
Yeah, this is a flavored one.
I think the flavored ones they do, but otherwise, not really. Yeah, we can talk about beer. I'm happy to talk about it.
Okay.
I think he might have tshuva on it. We can talk about it. Ramoshi does have an interesting tshuva, has a very famous tshuva about whiskey, about cherry casks. So we can talk. Maybe we can go through that tshuva next week or something. Maybe we can bring some samples if everybody wants as well.
And we'll only drink it at the end if you agree with whatever it
was. So that's with regard to, so Ramosha has another, so it's another statement when it comes to the interplayer. Keep reading in the tour. V'gzeirat pat, lo nipachta b'chol ha-mekomot. So what's interesting is the tour quotes that this gzeira, this prohibition of having pat akum, of eating bread, which is made by non-Jews, did not spread throughout all of the Jewish communities at the time of the sages. So, I don't know, like the 3rd century CE, it didn't spread to all the communities for Jews. Because of Adoni Avi Arash, ועל זה סומכים הגדולים שאינם אוסרים אותם לבני בני נתן שנוהגים בו היתר, כי הם אומרים שהם המקומות של לפשת איסורו. So this is why the Rush says that in his location, in his locale in Germany, there was indeed no minhag to prohibit pat akum, and that's why it's permitted to have pat akum. ועוד סומכים על מה שכתוב בחילוף מנהגים שבין בני ישראל לבני בבל, מי שיטענה גימל ימי מותר בפת של הלווי גחבים משום חיי נפש. Not only that, but there's another reason that bread is permitted in this case, is because one of the practices that is mentioned in certain contexts, the friendship between different communities, is that bread, if you fasted for 3 days, this is the particular case they're talking about, then you're allowed to eat non-Jewish made bread. Why? Because non-Jewish made bread is a staple. As opposed to bishalakum, as opposed to other cooked foods, bread is considered to be such a staple, such a chaye nefesh, such a basic necessity. I mean, nowadays it's probably not so basic the same way, but certainly for historically, the same way you need to have water, you need to have bread. Bread is like the most basic food to have. And so because of that, there are a lot of kulas that relate to bread. So just to, I guess, summarize a little bit just in terms of the historical and different senses, in terms of the psak, in terms of what the actual practice of what we follow pat akum, there are a few different levels, right? There is the most makel position, which is the way that we typically pass in America, that any bread which is made in a commercial setting is permitted.
If it's kosher.
If it's kosher. Even if it's made by non-Jew, right? Even if there are alternatives. There is a slightly more machmir version we saw that the Shach has, which is that if there is an equal product of a non-Jew, made by Jews in the same exact town, so then you should buy from the Jewish baker.
Equal in quality.
Equal in quality, yes. Yeah, that was Shach. Let's make sure I got that right. Yeah, if there's the exact same quality there. There's more machmir position, which is the Shulchan Aruch, which is that if this type of bread is only available in a Jewish bakery, in a non-Jewish bakery, then that's going to be permitted, right? So even if, the Jewish bakery has bread, but it's not as good, you just don't like it, you like the baguette that's made by Fairway better than the baguette that's made, by the Jewish bakery, you still have to buy the baguette, according to the Shulchan Aruch, in the Jewish bakery. Finally, the most machmir position says that all of these are prohibited, and the only time it's ever permitted to buy bread which is made by a non-Jewish bakery is if you're somewhere where there really is no other alternative. You're in a desert and there's no other food sources. That's kind of the most machmir position. No one really holds by that, but just to be aware of, those are kind of the 4 different positions you could hold by. It comes to pat akum. So that's in terms of the levels of like psak. In terms of the rationale, like why is it that people hold of these different positions? So part of it has to deal with like how we understand this prohibition. So in terms of the different explanations, so some people understand that the reason that pat akum might be permitted in some cases is because bread is such a basic staple. And since bread is such a basic staple, therefore it's going to be permitted. Now, based on that question of it's such a basic staple, you can kind of see a little bit of a debate as to how basic is it. Is it so basic that if you're in a desert and there's no alternative food, we're going to permit it, right? This isn't the case of pikuach nefesh. Obviously, pikuach nefesh, you'd definitely be allowed. But even if you have other potential foods, but, you're in a desert and, potentially might become pikuach nefesh later, or you might be starving, if you're in a place where there really is no alternative food sources, so in that case, then it becomes so basic, we're going to allow pat akum. That's one way to read it. However, some people believe, no, bread is so basic that even in a place where non-Jews make bread, even a place where there are Jews who make bread, if this particular type of bread is not sold by Jewish bakers, then that's considered to be as if you're living in a desert and there's no alternative bread, because this particular bread, right, maybe you are picky. You only want to eat baguettes, or you only want to eat, bagels. You don't want to have something else. I mean, I think it's pretty common for kids to be, they only want bagels, and they only want, you know, the poppy seed bagels or everything bagels. They don't want, you know, the plain bagels, or rainbow bagels, whatever the choice is for the particular child. So that would be, you know, a slightly different, the same rationale, but it would apply a little bit more broadly. When it comes to the Ashkenazi psak, or Romeiko, so there, it's not just that the Romeiko, it's also that the rationale used is actually a much broader rationale. Because the rationale there is actually not about the fact that it's such a basic staple, that's true as well, but it's also this larger theory about the fact that the general minhag never really spread. It never really had this minhag that ever came up. Why does these theories matter for us? Because why this matters is that if you focus on the reasoning of not only that the minhag never came about, but because of the fact that bread is so basic, so the way that the historical development, this is the kind of the important point, the historical development of these prohibitions is that the rabbis first came along and they said, bishul akum is prohibited. Right, any cooked food by a non-Jew are going to be prohibited to eat, unless there are the exceptions that we listed, you know, earlier about it not being orla shulcha malachim, that it's not eaten on a royal table, or it's, you know, it's the food was slightly cooked by a Jew. Right, we talked about some of these, you know, we mentioned some of these, but otherwise, bishul akum is prohibited. So later on, at least according to some positions, at a later position in history, the rabbis came and said tat akum is also going to be prohibited, but certain types of pot akum are going to be permitted because it's such a basic staple. In which case, this is the way they're mostly going to read it, is that at that moment in history, not only do they permit pot akum, you know, when there's no other food, but they also permitted pot akum from the problem of bishul akum. Meaning not only did they deal with that prohibition that they had, you know, the second prohibition, but they actually were also dealing with that earlier gzeira that they had earlier made about bishul akum. Because in theory, as I mentioned earlier, every, you know, type of baked good is also cooked in general, because cooking is a very, you know, general, generic term for, you know, making food. So, in theory, every baking is also cooking, and nonetheless, it's still permitted because a later gzeira kind of permitted it. That's kind of the way that the Torah presents it. So Rav Moshe is kind of make this argument that this is why we're not going to have a problem of bishul akum when it comes to pot akum. And he kind of says all of this a little bit clearer than I just explained it. Bedavar pot Yisrael, this is source number 5, this is written in the Tshuva, written in 1951. Bedavar pot Yisrael shafa akum, when it comes to bread, kosher bread, which is baked by a non-Jew, shesover hatur, the yesh lo din bishul akum, that the Torah quotes that there still is a prohibition of bishul akum, should be also lo nagu heter bishum akum, hini lechora utamua, de mai time lo ye gam be pashul akum, shefa akum, iser bishul akum, dichi machma chu pashul akum adifa lehakel. So he asked this question on the Torah's conclusion, that the Torah seems to permit bread baked by a non-Jew from the prohibition of bishul akum. Why is it? Bishul akum, after all, is should be applicable to baking, because even baking is a type of cooking. So you should also be prohibited. And indeed, Rav Moshe actually quotes, V'ayin baran, shemefurash shel'en bishul akum leka chilos, v'gam v'pat shel akum ikazem. Indeed, actually, Baran, one of the major Rishonim, actually does suggest that when it comes to bread, you actually have to be concerned not only with the prohibition of pat akum, but also the prohibition of bishul akum. And so the rabbi will actually be much more machmir in these cases. V'im kain, shegam v'pat shel akum yesh bo iser mishum bishul. So according to that position, you have to be really concerned about bishul akum. Nonetheless, the Torah does not conclude that way. The Torah says we're not concerned about bishul akum when it comes to bread. Why is it? U'mikol makom, this is his explanation, hitiruhu mishum chayi nefesh, ve'ein atzibor yecholim lamod bat, lo pashta b'chol Yisrael, nimsa sheleka acher ha'heter iser bishul, imkin gam pashta Yisrael, shafa akum, mishlo heter b'chol heter. So why is it that there's no concern for pan akum? Because at the moment that the rabbis designated this, or decreed this second decree, right, not only is cooking prohibited, but also baked things are prohibited. So at that moment, they noticed that for many Jews, this is very difficult, especially in communities where there wasn't much bread. And so the minhag did not spread. Not only did the minhag not spread, but at that moment, the earlier prohibition, when it came to vis-a-vis bread specifically, also was matir, right? So you were kind of permitted that component of bishul akum, that if it's bishul akum, we said there are a few exceptions. Exception number one, you know, if the Jew participates in the cooking. Exception number two, if the food is not royal l'shulchan malachim, it's not something that's offered on the Jewish, on a, you know, royal table. And exception number four or five, there are a few others, is that if it's bread, at least according to the Torah, they permitted bread specifically at a later time. So just in terms of the history, in terms of why bread wouldn't have an issue, Rav Moshe is kind of explaining the rationale here.
So, can I ask one clarification question? But if, so for instance, we first issued bishul akum, and at first people thought it applied to bread, and then later they issued a decree that said it did not apply to bread, but you said that that second issuance didn't necessarily spread to all communities, so shouldn't they have been stricter about not eating bread cooked by a non-Jew versus the opposite?
Well, in some communities, yeah, in some communities it's not clear that there's no prohibition. That's what the Ran quotes.
Okay.
Indeed, it sounds like there still should be a problem with bishul akum, even in, there actually is some debate. We tend to not paskin the way that the halacha developed. It's not so common.
So the president was initially stricter, and then we got more lenient.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, as they added more things to be machmir for,
about,
so then
yeah.
they were makel on some things
as
part of that
umbrella. They specifically went out of their way, whenever they did it, even if it was before or after, to make, especially if it was after, to make pas akum, when it's pas palter anyway, to be okay, then it's clear that they intended it not to be part of bishul akum anymore, even if it was at one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there wouldn't be a separate pas akum, pas palter.
Well, it's a little bit more complicated because there are, the rules are a little bit different. For instance,
right.
like the question of like the pilot lights,
right.
it's not so obvious that pilot lights would solve the problem of bishul akum. Actually, it probably does not. A pot akum, yeah. It doesn't really solve the problem. Because the SGF would be part of the real baking, not just
right.
turning on the flame. So, like that would be a difference, and I'm not sure that would, you know, that's worth pointing out. It really is a
different way to make it different, give it its own name, and treat it differently, especially if it came after the original prohibition in bishul akum, would pretty much be telling that, in fact, that they are
not treating it as bishul akum.
Yeah, but it could be they're also adding more chumras because bread is just, you know, a very staple food, so we might apply different rules to it. I mean, even in, you know, forget kosher of whether non-kosher food, even like milk and meat, there are special rules when it comes to bread that don't apply to other foods. Like, you're not allowed to have bread or cooked goods which are milchik or fleishik unless, there are two exceptions, but unless it's very clear that they're milchik or fleishik. So, you know, if it's on Shavuos and it's like there's a cheese put on top of the bread, and then it's fine. But otherwise, you're not allowed to have, you know, milchik or fleishik baked goods. It's a big problem. It came up actually in college because there's at Columbia when I was there, they had something they used to call Busserfest, which was a meal of mostly men, and every dish was supposed to be meat. It was like very college, very, very man, you know, space of every dish being meat. And so, like, the dessert would have meat, which was honestly not a very appealing appetizing. But there's always the question of, like, oh, what about the bread? Should we also make the challah wheat? And everyone, and there's always, like, that from person that to tell, like, no, 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 you can't make the challah meat. The challah has to be parv.
Were you that person?
No, it was actually someone else. I wasn't in charge of it.
But also, if it's so clear, if it's Busser Fest and everyone knows there's meat in it, isn't that clear enough for it to be okay?
Yeah, we could probably debate whether it might be. That might have been.
Okay.
It probably would be fine in that case, actually. But, yeah. So I guess they didn't know the halacha well enough.
It's okay if there's some kind of sin.
Yeah, right. Which is why, like.
It's okay to eat dairy. I don't have any eaten for years, but what do I call them? English muffins. Because they look totally different. Everybody knows English muffins have milk in them.
Yeah.
And that's like a cinnamon in and of itself. That it looks like
yeah, or like, give me an example, burekas in Israel.
Right.
So the standard burekas is potato,
right.
which is made in like a rectangular type of shape.
Right.
But they're also cheese burekas,
right.
but they're always made in a triangular shape.
Right.
And it's actually intentionally always made a triangular shape, not because it tastes better or anything like,
yeah.
because that way it's a simon. Everyone knows this is not a potato burekas, this is a cheese burekas, it is milchik. So indeed, there are like rules about, you know, making it clear. As long as everyone knows it's clear, then it's fine. Nowadays, it's an interesting question, it's like the packaging says it's like it's fleishig on it, is that good enough? There's like interesting questions about if that's good enough too, but either way. Rav Moshe finally does say one last thing, which is interesting, we'll end with this, in its full context. He says the following. He says, like, the third to last line at the bottom. He says, What about, this is a question, I guess, both for Bishul Akum and Pat Akum. What about if the workers are Jewish, right? They have Jewish ancestry, but they're not religious at all, right? They even are Michal Shabbos for Hestia, right? They drive their cars on Shabbos, maybe they open their bakeries on Shabbos, right? They're really clearly not religious in any sense. So is there a concern of Bishul or Pat Akum? What do you guys think?
No, because if the whole idea is having to do with intermarriage, you're not going to be intermarrying if you're buying bread from a non-religious Jew, because his daughter is going to be, or the woman, his son is going to be Jewish.
Yeah, so on one hand, that makes sense, yeah.
But I feel like you're not really allowed to partake in any transgression. So once something is a transgressed item, it becomes not allowed to a Jew.
Yeah, I mean, part of the question here is how do we relate to Jews who aren't religious in general? And does the fact that, in general, like the kosher status of someone who's not Jewish, of someone who's Jewish but not religious, like is much more difficult to rely on. I can't rely on, someone who doesn't keep kosher, that their kitchen is kosher. I can't, right. I can't rely on that. Right. I have to actually make sure that, someone who keeps kosher, has a kosher kitchen. So it's not entirely clear when it comes to kashrut, how do we define, who is Jewish for this purpose? And there's actually a big debate when it comes to Pat Akum and Bishul Akum. Should that apply? Should the rules of kashrut apply, or should the rules of chatnut about intermarriage? And then some people have more ideological positions of maybe intermarriage technically doesn't apply to non-religious Jews, but ideologically we don't want to, you don't want to get married to someone who's not religious. Also, so there's like a lot more ideology here and
so this is a little bit more of a black and white question because they're breaking Shabbos to make you the spread versus.
Well, not necessarily in this particular case. He's just saying that they are people don't keep Shabbos.
Got it. Never mind.
Yeah, I was just giving an example. They're making the bread on Sunday.
Got it. Okay.
But they, we know that yesterday they didn't keep Shabbos. So can you eat that bread? So Rav Moshe says, at least, it's not clear how we say it when it comes to other prohibitions, but certainly when it comes to this particular question of Pat Akum, Shiyoter Noseh Kesheasovrim De'en Landin Akum Inyan Zeh De'ha Isra Mishum Chatnut Velo Nesar Achitun. So the way Alan said it, which was that if the whole prohibition is based on intermarriage, well, there's technically no prohibition of intermarriage with non-religious Jews. They, not religious, but they are Jews, and there's no problem of intermarriage. And those who are more machmir is very confusing, and therefore you can allow you to eat bread which is made by a Jewish non-religious baker. You have no concerns of pat akum in any sense, and even if there is a Jewish alternative, a from Jewish alternative that makes the exact same type of bread, maybe even superior bread, you'll still be allowed to buy, in Tel Aviv, bakery that, run by, whatever the typical chiloni there, it wouldn't be a problem. You'd allowed to buy it. And Rav Moshe thinks that the people who are more machmir doesn't make sense. Now, as I said, the people who are more machmir, it's a halachic debate, but it certainly has some ideology about how do we view non-religious people and, is there still concern of chatnus or not? So it's a larger topic that has certainly a lot of halachic ramifications, as well as very interesting hashkafic ramifications that apply as well, and certainly the way we feel about our relationship to other Jews might come into play when it comes to those questions. But at least when it comes to Bishul Akum, Rav Moshe makes it clear, not a problem but when it comes to Pat Akum, not going to be a problem. All right. Any questions about this?
Just a comment. When I lived in Boston,